Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Good evening, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, the wilds of Salem, Indiana, and somewhere in the tropics of Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio, and of course our technical producer manning the chat room, manning the phones, Eric Altman from Pennsylvania. We'll give you that number if you have a call tonight. That number is 347-855-8123, and that's directly into the massive Blog Talk Radio studios where you can have a chance to talk to our special guest. Before we get started with the show, though, tragedy struck Orlando, Florida, and SeaWorld yesterday. Hits pretty close to home. Anytime we've had a fellow educator hurt, and what happened yesterday, of course, this young lady was killed by one of the killer whales, part of the show. It's really a sad day for all the people that are involved and work with wild animals, and it's pretty tough. I mean, I didn't know the young lady, been to SeaWorld before, had a chance to experience the show, but now with the publicity involving the accident, and of course they're questioning the use of any wild animal in any type of performance, it really, this is what I was afraid was going to happen. As many of you know, for the last 31 years I've traveled all over the country with my wild animals, presenting programs in elementary schools and nature centers, done things for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We've taken animals on the old Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, Today's Show, even had animals on with Oprah Winfrey. But I've always felt the most important thing that we're involved with, my wife and I, is having the opportunity to visit hundreds of schools each year with our collection of wild animals. And It really, I think it's just blown out of proportion, especially with the media taking this one accident. And let me put it this way. Anyone that works with wild animals, like myself, does it on a day-to-day basis. They're fully aware of the risk involved. And, of course, you're talking about working with an animal that weighs several tons. And let's face it, we're just very, very fragile. I mean, there's no way physically we could compete with any wild animal. I mean, it's just, there's just no way. So anyone that's involved with it, they know exactly what they're getting into. It's a sad day, but I'm sure if that young lady was asked if it was her time, how would it, like to happen. I mean, I think she'd rather say, I'd rather lose my life to doing something I love very, very much versus just something that's just so, I mean, 86,000 people a year are killed on motorcycles, and those stories will go completely ignored. But one person, I mean, they do hundreds of shows a year, not only on the Florida coast, but of course on the West Coast, and it's just too bad. So our prayers with the folks at SeaWorld, and we hope they carry on there. They have the opportunity to carry on and continue the wonderful work they do with education, and all of us here at this program, we're very, very sorry, and I'm going to move on, but I've kind of said my piece, my little soapbox there, so that's enough said about that. I have a new friend tonight, everybody, for all my listeners that have been catching up on the show each week, and of course you can download it, go through the archives and download the show from the past, many shows. But a good friend of mine, explorer, naturalist, and how do I say this? He's a little different.
Special. We like to say special.
But my good friend Henry Day is going to assist me this evening and the weeks to come, and as he's my co-host, my sidekick, my little black-haired Ed McMahon is going to join us on Wild World. That's pretty good, Henry. So how's the world of Henry Day today?
Well, it's doing pretty good. I'm waiting for this week to be over. But everything's going pretty well.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. Well, I know you always have unique interpretations of conversations, so this ought to be, I'm going to tell you everybody right now, this is going to be a true adventure for me as well. So,
well, let's hope so.
Yeah, welcome aboard, Henry. It's great to have you as
well,
part of the
show. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. I'm pretty pleased that you invited me to be part of all of this.
You may regret it later, but but I've been real excited this week. You know, I've always tried to find the top guest, and each week I search around the world, per se, and look for people I know that will my audience will enjoy and be entertained and also educated at the same time. This gentleman who's I've asked to be on the program tonight, I've known, gosh, I can't hardly believe this, probably 32 years. And it's always been an adventure with him. Now he's with Bass Pro Shops and Tracker Boats. He's a professional bass fisherman. I'll tell you what, he's the best fisherman that I know. And we're going to talk fishing tonight because I know everybody is sick of winter. And they're ready for spring. From Salem, Indiana, my good friend Dan White. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great, Larry.
This is quite the professional deal, isn't it?
You know, this sounds really, really like a good deal. I'm anxious to get started here and have some people ask some questions and talk a little bit. Hopefully, we can talk a little bit about some things we used to do and some fun times that we had. So,
well, I have to tell everyone. I first met Dan, like I said, it was 31 or 32 years ago, and that was
32.
My 32 years ago. And at that time, he was a distinguished Indiana conservation officer with the Department of Natural Resources. And he walked into the shop I was working at, and it was a pet shop, per se, and I was in charge of the reptile section. And Dan was quite the reptile enthusiast, and he walked in one day, and we started chatting, and before I knew it, he said, why don't you come to Salem, Indiana, and we'll go snake collecting, and that was the beginning. Do you remember those days, Dan?
I actually do, and I actually remember where we went. On our first snake collection was to Harrison Crawford National Forest. That was the first time that we went out.
And my recollection is we didn't do very well.
We got one copperhead that trip, and I don't remember what else, but I remember one copperhead for sure. And you know, that's something here, you know, here at home that people, everything they see is a copperhead, of course, and that's the thing that we tried to do here was educate them about the snakes and a lot of your things. I mean, you came to the fairs, the county fairs, and did some extra things for me down here that really helped me a lot.
Well, I can remember, and I don't know if you remember this particular incident, but there was a snake bite reported, and I was thinking it was either Seymour or it was clear to Louisville. And they had the fellow at the hospital, and he was showing the symptoms of snake bite. And by the time you arrived, they had the snake that had bitten him. They had it in, I believe, a tin can.
That is correct.
And you looked in the tin can expecting to either see a copperhead or a timber rattlesnake. And it was a non-venomous hognose snake.
You know, the thing was beat so bad when they actually captured the snake. I thought it was going to find a live snake, and they dumped it out, and they actually dumped it out like it was still alive. And I started looking. I couldn't figure out what it was to start with.
Yeah.
And actually had to get the mouth and find the mouth part. And I said, so this is the snake that bit this guy. Yes, it is. It sure did. And, you know, as the story went on, I'll let you go ahead and talk, but it's actually pretty funny how it played out.
Well, he had like an immediate recovery when you identified it, if I remember.
Well, actually, what happened is the doctor came down and we talked, and I said, look, this is a non-poisonous snake. And he said, well, the guy's up in the room, and he's showing all the symptoms, and it's red, it's real swollen and red, and it's got two fang marks. So I go up and see this guy, and honest to goodness, Larry, when I walked into the room, his wife was holding his hand. The guy was—he was white as a sheet. He was just, his eyes were all sunk back. And I thought the guy was—oh my gosh! Hey, this can't be the snake that bit him. And so I looked at the marks, and we talked. And to make a long story short, what happened? This guy was baling hay at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
They used the old style baler. It had the wire ties, and evidently, he'd picked the bale up to put it on the wagon. He looked. The snake was in the bale itself, wiggling, and he dropped the bale, and the snake bit him as he dropped it. Well, actually, what happened was those two wire punctures hit him in the leg. It wasn't any snake bite at all. It was just the wire things hit him in the leg and made the hole. So I talked to the guy for a minute, and I said, sir, do you realize? I said, I identified the snake, and it was a hognose. So he proceeded to tell me what went on, and I told him, I said, well, you know what's happened? You've dropped that bale of hay, and that wires have hit you there, and your nerves and all your reaction has told you that was a venomous snake, and you were going to die. And I said, doggone, when I walked in here, I thought you were. And so the doctor was there, and we all, you know, and the guy finally actually started getting some of his color back right there at the hospital. And so by the time I got the paperwork done, talked to the doctor, talked to the EMS guys, drove down the road to the all-night diner there. Here was the guy and his wife. They'd already checked out, and he was in the diner getting them a bite to eat, and everything was great. But, golly, it was a funny story. I mean, how it played out, and I told that to a lot of kids and you know, through the years. But
right.
Great snake bite stories.
Yeah,
that's funny. I'm from Kansas, and I put up a lot of bales of hay, and I know exactly about finding parts of snakes in the bales and still alive. But that is funny story.
Yeah, it, you know, the guy, I, honest to goodness, when I walked in the room, I was questioning myself. I said, this guy's a goner. I mean, I never seen anybody look so bad. And so it took a little while, but he came out of it.
How many, you know, being a conservation officer, how many times did you run into that, snake bites? And
you know, several times. You know, I was an officer for right at 25 years, so there was a lot of instances, especially back early, and I kind of was noted as the guy that knew snakes, so they would call from, you know, counties and counties around, because unfortunately, even a lot of our officers, we went through snake identification, but a lot of our officers didn't want anything to do with snakes. They weren't, you know, they weren't handy with picking them up, and they didn't, you know, they identification maybe, but they really didn't want to mess with them much. So we got called on a lot of different snakes and things that happened, and Tony Wilson was one of the renowned guys in the state of Indiana on snakes, and did a lot of talks in colleges and high schools, and which several of us did throughout the state. But one of the other calls that I had was a lady called. They lived over near Orange County, the area just above Paoli. She says, I think I got copperheads. And says, I'm really worried about it. And she says, we've locked the doors. And so I made a trip over to Orange County, me and another officer, and we get there. The doors are shut. They're battened down. It looks like nobody lives at this property. So we go in, and this lady says, I'm sure they're copperheads, and my kids come carrying them in their hands like fishing worms. And I said, none of them got bit? No. So she went and got me this jar, glass jar. and I opened it. I took the lid off this glass jar. It was kind of, I don't know, some kind of film or something on it, and looked in, and it was full of baby copperheads. And I thought, now where did you find these at? They were in the outhouse. They had an outside bathroom. This was back in the late 70s.
Yeah.
And so the kids had went to this outhouse and found this snake out there. And it was just probably a female that had the young out there, and they still had the bright yellow tails and the whole thing. So, oh, they were ready to move. They were going to, you know, move and leave the house. And, I mean, it was a bad situation. And I said, well, let me see what we can do to see if we can't help you. So the next 2 days, we went over a couple times, and we actually ended up taking a black king snake over, and we didn't find any copperheads after that, and told them that this snake was a pet, and we were going to turn it loose there. It was not going to harm him, wasn't going to bite him, none of that. And so they kids petted, you know, the snake. They knew it was a good snake to have there, and we told them that would keep the copperheads away. And now when I went back 2 days later, they still hadn't been in the yard. This place was still batting down. But once we released that king snake, and it was there for a day or so, I drove back by to check on them, and they were out in the yard playing, and everything was okay. But it was it was just a funny snake call. I mean, that was another one that was just, you know, sticks in my mind. But there was a lot of calls where people, when they called, everything was a copperhead. There were a few rattlesnakes, even a lot more than there is now in the county and in the area. Jackson County was pretty known for it. But to actually find a true copperhead that somebody finds, or they were very rare. And even now they're even more rare than they were then. But it was rare to find those.
Well, you know, go ahead, Kenny.
Are they live bearers or do they lay eggs?
Live bearers.
I can still remember the time I'd been over to, I shouldn't probably tell this story, but what the hey. I'd been in West Virginia with a school teacher, and what we would do is we'd go, the people that lived in the hill country, they would basically collect snakes for money. And the people in the leather business hadn't discovered this at one time. But then they did. They figured out that these hill people would catch snakes for them, and they would sell them pretty reasonably. So it was kind of messing us up, because we'd go down there, myself and the science teacher, and we'd buy snakes from them, you know, for talks or whatever. And we went down there one time, and one of the guys had got onto this idea. They'd take out a log chain and tie it to these big rocks and then attach it to their pickup truck, and they'd pull off these rocks, these huge dens of copperheads.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so I'm looking, and they've got a 55-gallon oil drum, and it's half filled with copperheads they'd caught. I mean, there was a lot. So I'm looking in this oil drum at him, and I'm saying, man, what are you going to do with these? He says, well, what you don't buy, we're going to sell to the leather people. They're coming in around here. They'll be around here this week sometime. I thought, oh, God, I don't want that to happen. So I said, what do you want for them? So that one fella, he said, well, I got to have me at least a quarter apiece. So I said, let's start bagging them. So I don't know, guys. I bet I took at least 100, at least. So I've got 100 copperheads, you know, which I don't need 100 copperheads. So what I'm thinking is, you know, all these areas in Indiana that I'd collected snakes out of, I said, I'm going to kind of restock the population. So I take them down to southern Indiana and my favorite snake spots, I was releasing them. Well, dumb me made a mistake, and I told this little story to one of your fellow officers. And I can still remember you pulling me aside, Dan, and you said, Larry, you were the topic of one of our meetings the other day.
Yeah.
He said, I think the fellow's name was Lyman or Linton or...
Yes, Lyman Gobin. Yep, I know Lyman very well.
Yeah, and I thought he was just a good old guy, and I thought that was a pretty interesting story. And then I realized that I was being investigated by the DNR.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was absolutely
your education and things. You're doing the youth education's got you out of that one, I think. So.
Boy, I tell you, for a quarter apiece, though, you couldn't beat that price.
That was a good price.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't even make a dent. I know I at least bagged up 100 of them, but at least. And it was.
They are beautiful creatures.
I worked covert for almost 7 years on and off, and I actually worked for the Department of Interior during that time. We went to a lot of different states, and I saw a difference in attitude about reptiles and snakes and imports, and one of the things we were working was smuggling. You know, there was quite a bit of smuggling going on at that time, and our national bird, the bald eagle, that was one of our big targets. Was we had people that were selling a single eagle feather for $50 a pop, and
wow.
They were killing 10, 20, 30 eagles and selling these pieces. They were making necklaces out of talons, and it went on and on and on. They were smuggling ivory, and so there's a lot of things out there, and anytime you put a monetary value on wildlife like that, there's going to be, if it's a big value, there's going to be somebody go after it. And in that case, just like you're saying, it was a small value, but yet that was a big value to them. That was a lot of money to them. So, fortunately, a lot of that does get stopped. And, that's why we have the things that we have now. And, the eagles are off the endangered species list. And you actually see a few, out there now. But back then, it was pretty tough. I did a thing with Larry Bird, and he was that was what it was over. The topic was a bald eagle, and we did a segment called "The Bird Meets the Bird." So that was kind of a cool deal. We did an educational thing with that.
We're with professional bass fisherman Dan White tonight, and also former conservation officer. And Dan, when you left the conservation officer. I don't want to call it a business, but you changed occupations.
Well, I actually retired. Actually retired from there, and like I said, it was about almost 25 years, and I had the opportunity to go to. I've always fished. I've always done a lot of things with ranger boats. I've done a lot of things in the fishing industry, even when I was an officer, and I had the opportunity to do some things with that. But right after I retired, I had a stint doing a couple years with PSE Archery, which Pete Shepley and John Shepley and from Tucson, Arizona, we actually opened a training and promotion center teaching kids and parents and people to shoot archery. So my wife and I actually worked for 2 years doing that program. So. And then after that, I've still maintained my fishing, did a lot of fishing, but I had the opportunity to go to the new Bass Pro Shop when it opened up in Clarksville, and I was there since before they opened, actually, putting the concrete down and the walls and all the stuff you had to do to make it look like it looks today. And if, your listeners haven't been down there, that's a place they really need to come and bring the kids and the family, because just walking through the place, it's really cool. It's the second largest store in the United States. Only Springfield is larger. Of course, you can't beat the mother store. You're not allowed to. You can't be bigger than the mother store. So, but there's really a neat atmosphere, with the animals and the wildlife and the fish. That displays there with the large aquarium and just the sheer size of the store. It's just a good time to come and walk through and look at everything, and it's hard to see it all in one trip. But
well,
I had that opportunity, and it was given to me to go down there and work as the general manager for Tracker Marine, and I really enjoyed it. I've been there 5 years, so I really enjoy it.
Those shows those stores are absolutely spectacular. I mean, it's a tourist destination.
Yeah, we actually have people that travel all over going to different stores and comparing them and looking at them. And Johnny Morris is the founder of that. He started at, it's kind of the ultimate story of a guy. He started in his dad's back room of his liquor store selling baits, and he had this idea, I want to make bass baits and fishing baits. And it all came from that one individual's dream and how he's expanded this all the way through all these years. And I'll tell you what, folks, he's the most down-to-earth guy. It's absolute, just a super, super guy in life and in everything. He's just that type of individual. I've really been fortunate. I've met a lot of people since I've been at Bass Pro and actually just got through doing a promotion with Tony Stewart and Ryan Newman and Bill Jordan at Tony's house up at Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Had two kids that their thing that they wanted to do was Catch a Dream, and the Catch a Dream Foundation actually helped put this thing on or does this thing. And I'm just a helper. I'm just there to participate and help with this. And what a wonderful thing. They bring the parents of both those kids in. The kids get to come in, and they get to hunt on Tony's ranch up there. Tony's there, and Ryan's there. And they make a big deal out of it. These are two kids that have cancer, and they're fighting cancer. And that's what they want to do. It's called Catch a Dream, and they want to go hunting. They like to hunt. We had a girl last year, Dana, beautiful young lady, came up and did the same thing, and the year before we had a couple more. And it's just you don't realize until you get involved with people like that how true and down-to-earth those guys are, Tony and Ryan and of course, Johnny Morris is there and Bill Jordan. They give their time and all their efforts, and they don't expect anything for it. I mean, that's where you really understand how these guys click, and it was pretty neat being a part of that.
Well, we had a guest on a while back who was involved, Mark Fowler, a son of Jim Fowler, who's now a documentary producer for the Discovery Channel, and they took Special Olympic kids up Mount Kilimanjaro, the Special Olympics athletes, and it was the same kind of thing. He says, it's literally life-changing.
It is.
When you get involved with something like that. And I know Tony Stewart, he's pretty special, and he's also helps a lot of animal charities and wildlife charities as well. So
Tony's a hunter, and he's an archer, he's a hunter. Bill is, those guys are, and that's what these kids came to do was hunt. And unfortunately they did, they were successful. But everything's done on such a scale and such a grand scale for these kids. It touches your heart when you go to things like that, and it touches theirs too. And that's pretty cool to see that those guys, think that much that they, and it's a 3-day or 4-day deal. I mean, it's nothing that happens in a day's time. So it's not like they walk in and walk out. They're involved from the beginning to the end.
Oh, wow.
In the planning and everything that goes into this. It really is. And it's right here, right here at our state. And these guys do these kind of things. And really, people don't know it. Now, this particular hunt is produced by ESPN, and it is it's called Driven to Hunt. It's one of Bill Jordan's shows, the ESPN mm-hmm. shows. And so if people get a chance, they might want to catch that show because it's really
It is really good. I've seen it a few times. It's a great show.
Yeah, behind the scenes, it's unbelievable what goes on behind the scenes and how all the community and all the people that's involved. It's pretty cool.
Wow, that's fantastic. And the Bass Pro Shop gets involved with that as well?
They do. I actually go with Mike Benningfield. He's the he's a store GM. I'm the GM at Tracker. He's a store GM. And we get to do that together. I'm fortunate enough they let me drag along. They probably don't need me, but I get to go. So I I pitch in, do anything I can to help, and I've enjoyed doing that since they started it. So it's kind of an annual thing. I really look forward to it, and every time I go, I just am so thankful for what we have and my kids and how healthy they are, and You know, just it makes you think. It really does.
Absolutely does. We're with Dan White, Bass Pro Fisherman, Tracker Boats. We're going to talk fishing, everybody, because I know spring is it's got to be coming soon. This is Midwestern. Oh, my Lord, this winter's just been, I can't wait. But there's more behind us than in front of us. So we've probably got a month of this left, so cross your fingers. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World with Dan White and my co-host Henry Day. This is Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be back in a few. I have a few PSAs, and stay tuned. Blog Talk Radio, everybody.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Duty, freedom, country, family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend.
While many talk about these ideals without action, they are just empty words.
If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education.
thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Good evening, everybody. This is Larry Batson, and I've got a fantastic guest tonight. Professional bass fisherman. He's with Bass Pro Shops and Tracker Boats, Dan White. Right here from my home state of Indiana, and we're going to talk a little fishing here tonight. And also my co-host tonight, Henry Day. Are you doing okay, Henry?
Doing just fine. You know, it's really fun talking to Dan. He's an interesting character.
A character is the right word.
That's what happens when you know somebody for 32 years, isn't it?
Yeah. I've known Larry for, 40 years?
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you. Go ahead.
That's the same category there. We've got to get together sometime, Henry. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
So let me tell you the story I remember from when I'd go down to Dan's and stay for a while. This man never slept. when he was a conservation officer, he was, I pity the criminals that are doing something wrong. And once, I'm laughing already before I start to tell the story. So I'm sitting there on his couch, and he says, that, I don't know, it's 9 or 10 o'clock. He says, I got to go. So he takes off. He's hot on a mission, you know. So he gets home, I don't know, it was probably almost daylight. And I hear him pull up, and then before he comes into the house, his house, I hear this howling coming from his barn. Oh, oh. And he walks in, I said, well, what happened? He says, well, he says, I was chasing some coon hunters. I didn't get them, but I got their dog. And I looked out in the barn, and the upper loft, here was, it looked, I think it was a, looked like a bloodhound, some kind of a hound. And
there
it was
three of them, Larry. There's three dogs. There's three dogs involved in this story. Go ahead.
Well, they're all hanging their head out the hayloft, howling for what I don't know. And so you said, I didn't catch them, but I caught their dogs. He says, they'll be calling me. And sure enough, I think it was like 8:30, 9 o'clock, I hear the phone ring, and Dan goes in there and picks it up, and he's, boys, you oughtn't have run from me. You shouldn't have run from me. One Indian's going to have to go to jail. And here they show up. And they were a sorry-looking lot, boy. Their heads were hanging down, you know. And of course, I imagine those dogs were fairly valuable.
That's when the price of fur was real expensive, and the dogs were valuable. They were $1,200 to $1,500, and I guess that was probably the early 80s, 1980s. So that was, yeah, they were valuable.
So that was that's my really funny Dan White story that I still remember.
You know, actually, that I'll tell you, I add a little bit to that story.
Okay.
I actually tracked and found the guys. They were back at a trailer, and when I went up and knocked on the door, they were all sitting playing cards. The only thing was that when I went in to talk to them, they were wet from the waist down. I mean, you could wring water out of their pants. That's how they'd run through the woods and through the briar patches. A couple of them were bleeding. And I said, so you guys weren't coon? Oh, no. I said, well, you don't know who these, I guess these dogs, nope, they're not our dogs. I said, well, good, they're pretty good dogs. I think I'm going to take them with me. So that's how they knew I had their dogs. But the funny part of this story is, when they come to get their dogs, they took two. And I said, what about that one? Well, that ain't our dog. There was a third dog, wasn't theirs. But he was a heck of a coon dog. So I went back, tried to find out who the dog belonged to. That dog hung around my house. I kept him for like 4 or 5 months. And then finally, a friend of mine said, I think I know who the dog belongs to, but he doesn't want the dog. The dog ran wild all the time. He said, but I'd sure like to have him. So I gave that guy that dog, but that was called Old Red. But that was a funny story. I was, the guys ripping water, and but they showed up just like we said the next morning. But you know, I had things like that happen quite often. You know, being an officer, you had a lot of leeway, and you really did try to educate a lot of people, and you didn't really have to arrest a lot of people or chase a lot of people. It wasn't really that way. Most people tried to do what's right, and most guys out there right now, I mean, the guy that's got a letter on his boat that's 2.5 inches instead of 3 inches, does he deserve a ticket? Well, no. You know, tell the guy what he needs to do to get in compliance. And so, and most of the COs that are there today, they use a lot of common sense, and I really feel that. I feel they do a good job and use common sense, and you know, they're educated guys, and they have to live in the community. And that's what I enjoyed living in the community I lived in and working for the people in the state, but more importantly, my county. And I tried to be involved in a lot of community things. And I think most of the COs do just that. I think they try to be involved and do what they need to do.
Well, Dan could have probably run for mayor of Salem, because every time we went anywhere, he had to at least plan on stopping a half a dozen times and chatting with folks. I mean, he was quite popular and quite well known in the Salem community.
You know, I still live here, and I'm really fortunate to have the people that I've known and friends that I've made over the years. And of course, my wife's a teacher for 35 years. She knows every kid that now have kids, and some of them have grandkids. And,
uh-huh.
and so, you know, as you live in a community that long, you do develop a lot of friendships and people you know. And it wasn't quite that way when I first moved here. It was a little bit different for me. I was went to college in California, moved back to Indiana, and came from central Indiana down to southern. And there's a little difference between that area.
Oh, it's a whole different culture.
Yes.
It's a whole different world. I can remember for the fair one time, I decided to take up some items to sell. We had a little booth in one of the buildings, and so I took up some items like, dog chew toys and this, that, and the other. And I had folks coming up to me, and they said, well, what's this? I said, well, you give your dog that to chew on. It cleans their teeth. You mean you buy something for the dog to chew on? I go, yeah, you do. It's rawhide. Well, what's wrong with a stick or a board or just a bone? I said, well, there's nothing wrong with it at all.
That's a true deal. You know, when I first moved here, I'll tell a quick story, and I know you want to get to fishing, but when I first moved here, they told me there was an area of this county that I couldn't go to. Said, oh, no, they'll shoot you up there. I go, oh, no. So I drive up there intentionally, drive back, and I'm back in this one area that, and it does look very remote and very, you know, remote area, but people, the housing and everything. I get back there to this area, and a guy comes down the road walking from a kind of a shack-type house up on top of the hill. He comes down. He goes, hey, he goes, you better get out of here. He goes, these people live down here. They're the meanest people. He goes, I'm just telling you. Yeah. And it was just like you said. It had the draw. And here, I said, oh, no. I said, I've heard about these guys are good down here. They're nice folks. And I just went along with the guy. And he goes, well, he goes, you would never want to go to one of their houses. It's nasty. And I said, oh, no. I said, that's where you're wrong, buddy. I said, I get down here. It's early in the morning. I'm going to be stopping one of them houses, see if I can talk them out of a cup of coffee, or you get to lunchtime, I may even swing by, see if I can get a sandwich at that store down there or whatever. And the guy looked at me and he goes, are you serious? I go, yeah. And he says, well, I'm the mayor of this area. Now, not the real mayor, but a mayor. That's what he called himself, of this whole area. He says, you're welcome to come to my house anytime. And from that day forward, I could go anywhere in that holler. I could go anywhere I wanted to, and those people treated me just absolutely. I mean, they would call me. These are people that wouldn't tell anything to anybody. I mean, they probably still had stills back then. I don't know. I heard the stories, but
yeah.
These people, and it was just how you approach those people, how you talk to them, and how
absolutely.
You spent your time. And I was very. I mean, that's the way I tried to do. My work, when I worked, I tried to treat everybody equal and have fun with them and still do my job. And I think most of the guys that are there today do the same thing. Of course, I always had to sneak off and go fishing as often as I could, too. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Have you been fishing here lately?
You know, not – well, I just came back from Florida over Christmas. I was down there and did some snook fishing and a little saltwater, but – bass fish, of course, bass fishing in the winter is, unless you're fishing through the ice,
right.
It's not much around here. The guys are starting to get ready for it, though. You know, there's a lot of events going on, a lot of tournaments. They just fished the Bassmaster Classic this last weekend, and fortunately for us, our number one guy, Kevin Van Dam, knocked him off down there and won the Bassmaster Classic down at Birmingham, Alabama. So. I usually try to attend those. I know we had a real big following there for the Classic this year and had a big booth in the display and the outdoor show, and a lot of folks get to go down and view that and see that. But that's a big sport now. $500,000 for winning that event, that's big money. So that's
well,
right up there with some of the golf tournaments and some of the other things.
Go ahead, Henry.
I just said that's unbelievable.
Oh.
That much money.
The amount of money in the fishing industry nowadays is just incredible. I mean, the lure industry is just, it's a science. It's, and these guys, it ain't like putting a worm on a hook and tossing it out to see and drown a worm anymore. You know?
You know, the thing that, and I listened to one of your messages there in between times, talking about take me fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Take me, you know, as my son and my daughter grew up, and I've taken plenty of neighbors and plenty of kids, probably some of the best memories I have, in fact, the best memories I have, are from my family, my son, other people's kids, and time that I've spent on the water with them. It's not winning boats. I've won a couple boats in my life. I won money. I've won, and that's been fun, and I enjoyed every minute of it. My tournament partner was Paul Jolly, a retired guy. He's a teacher, and he put up with me for, you know, for 30 years fishing. But it's the friendships you make, the people you meet, and there's events all over. Every state you go to, there's events to get involved with and get these kids out and get them on the water. They don't have to bass fish. They don't have to tournament fish. Take them fishing. Catch bluegill. Catch crappie. Catch anything that'll bite. And that's where the fun is watching their face when they hook that fish and getting them out there. Because I tell you, there's, you know, the number of kids that are enjoying that outdoors and learning those type of things is kind of dwindling a little. And that's something we can do as sportsmen and outdoor people, and that we love the outdoors and what that involves. And that's what we need to do, is take a little bit of our own time and spend it with the child, whether it's your child, your grandchild, or somebody else's. Take them out there and take them fishing.
What's the hot new thing in fishing right now? What can we look forward to this summer?
Well, you know, Kevin just won the Classic down there. It's patterns, Larry. These fish were just getting ready to kind of stage from coming up into the creek systems and up into the shallows, and, you know, the water temperature gets around that magic, you know, that magic number up around 45 to 55 degrees. That's when the fish get a little more active. And a lot of guys, what happens they get so anxious to go that they bust out there when it, like right now, the water's open and you can get your boat in, but boy, the fish is tough.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
These fish are sitting down there with lockjaw. They don't want to bite anything, and they don't want to chase anything. So it's really tough when they first start out, and you got guys that actually go the first week or so while the water's so cold, and they don't do well, so it kind of burns them out. But anytime you go in cold water, you know, you've got to fish slow. You've got to really be methodical with what you do. You know, you can't move fast baits, and as it warms, you can go into baits that you can fish a little faster and have a little more movement. But there's so many different techniques now. Back when you first started, boy, you had a rubber worm, you had a crankbait, and you had a topwater bait, and that was about the end of it. Well, now there's drop shot rigs, there's a lot of pitching and flipping, and it's never ending. It's an endless thing that you can do to fish with the different conditions that you have. And then you throw in all the different colors, and you throw all the other things that's involved, and line size and floating lines and light lines and heavy lines. And it's really confusing to a lot of people that just want to go have fun and catch a fish. So staying with the basics, just going there and getting you something that you feel comfortable fishing, because you'll catch more fish with something you either think is really, really hot and you want to get out and try it, and you put all that effort into that lure, you're going to catch more fish, or something you know caught fish in the past for you, and you're going to fish that, and you're going to have confidence in it. So, as far as hot baits this year, there's a lot of different things that's out there. The minnows, the big minnows that they're using now, the rubber-type minnows, have been a hot item for people. Of course, like the drop shotting and the smaller worms, the finesse fishing per se, a lot of people are doing well with that. You know, tubes, jigs, that type of thing. So, but everybody has their own stuff, and everybody has different things they want to throw. But just getting out and going, I think that's the most important thing. Just get out there and go and have a good time.
Absolutely. Well, my old buddy Billy Murray used to come up with this analogy. He said most people fish like if you were hunting with archery, you just shoot an arrow up in the sky and hoping it hits something.
That's probably true.
It'd be better to shoot it into the water.
Well, yeah, if you're fishing. Yeah. Of course, I shouldn't probably tell this story because I am in the presence of a great fisherman here, but...
I don't know about great.
But I was doing one of the outdoor shows. I think it was in Cleveland, and my friend Billy Murray was there, and he was setting up a booth, and the title of the booth was the top 10 lures for 83 or 84. Billy Murray's top 10 lures for 1984. And he's setting this booth up. And it's the first time I'd seen him at the show several years, and this was the first time ever he'd had this display. So I asked him about it, and he looked. He turned around, and he got me to the side. He goes, he'd always start the sentence with, "Son," he says, "I was at Eagle Claw, and they had a warehouse full of lures that did not sell. And they told me I could take all I want, and what I didn't sell, bring back." So that's what he'd done. He'd taken all these lures that Eagle Claw wasn't having any luck selling. They'd been flops. He put them on this big display, Billy Murray's top 10 lures, you know, and he had them all. It was beautiful. And after the show had opened, and they'd draw like 300,000 people through that show for 10 days. I walked by his booth, and he can't take those lures off quick enough for people buying them. It was like, I told him right then, I said, "You're a darn snake oil salesman."
You know, I tell you something that happens, Larry, a lot of times at boat shows and even at our store. We can take and show techniques in that tank, and we do quite often with different mm-hmm. baits. And the customer will actually see the bait and what type of action it has. And, of course, the fish in the tank will chase it or go after it. And you'll be surprised. It's just kind of like you're saying, well, they saw it. They see that it works, and so they want that bait, and they're trying it, and they do buy a lot of those baits. But, you know, I've got 10 pro staffers from all over the state and in Kentucky and Indiana that work on my pro staff team out of the Bass Pro Shop. And those guys are all tournament fishermen. They travel. They talk to lots of people. So if anybody sees those guys out there that have, you know, the big nitro boats and the fancy boats and you don't have to have a fancy boat to go fishing or catch fish or fish tournaments. You really don't. But if you see any of those guys, pick their brains. That's what those guys are out there for. They're out there for people to talk to, and they're glad to share information. They're glad to talk to you. They're glad to tell you techniques. And don't be afraid to do that. Those guys, they enjoy having people talk to them, and they enjoy having, you know, if anybody would like to call me at the store, I'd be glad to give me any information about how to get a hold of these guys in the different areas of the state. And, you know, just don't be afraid to talk to them about that.
Dan's number at the store, I just so happen to have it right here, is 812-218-5369.
That's my direct line. Yeah, it's direct line to my office. So.
Or you can email Dan at ddwhite@basspro.com. And the it's in Clarksville, Indiana, just, you know, not far from Louisville, so, or Louisville, or however you want to say it.
4 miles from the Ohio River, yep.
Well, we'll have to go fishing sometime. You know, I used to say snake collecting was more exciting than fishing. That's why I kind of gave that up for a while. Because I don't think I ever told you this, but when I was a youngster, we went fishing every day.
I know you used to. I couldn't get you out much. So,
no.
You're chasing them reptiles and giving a lot of talks and doing a lot of shows. And I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, have you ever kept track of how many thousands of kids that you have educated with your programs, Larry? I mean, really, have you ever sat back and tried to put a number on it?
I really haven't. And let's see, it's been 31 years. So I know now, though, I have school principals that come up to me and remember me from when they were in elementary school.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that everybody, probably a lot of the people that's listening don't realize, is how many kids are affected by those programs that you gave over years and years and years. And, I mean, here's a guy that, I mean, you talk about a guy dedicated his time. Larry, you dedicated your time and your efforts, and I've seen you time after time go in and do things. and spend so much time and money and never got that in return. I know, and I don't mind telling that on you now, but I know how much it took to do what you did, and I'm grateful. I know how much you did for my area and the kids that were affected down here, and I really appreciate what you did.
Well, it was my pleasure, you know. It's what it's all about. The children's what it's all about. You know, the day I'm having a bad day, and I think about the school kid that comes up to me, and, well, just the other day, I mean, practically brought tears to my eyes. He says, I want to be what you and I grow up. And I thought, oh, you ought to go to college, son. you ought to set them goals a little higher.
Well, I'll tell you, let's make a date. You plan it. You bring. You just plan on coming down and give me a shout, and we'll put a fishing trip together, and we'll go have some fun and hash some old times. And bring your co-host there with you. That'd be a good thing for him. I don't know if you.
Oh,
like
well,
to
thank
fish
you. Yeah, I love to fish.
You do?
Oh yeah, I haven't been fishing in a couple of years, but I'm saving up my money to buy a fishing license.
Well, maybe you should get that financed.
It's a little expensive anymore, but I don't think it's quite that bad.
Oh, God.
That lifetime license when they had them back. They don't have them anymore, but I took advantage of that when I had the opportunity.
They have a lifetime license. I didn't realize that.
They did, and they actually did away with it in Indiana. You could buy a lifetime hunting and fishing license. And when I bought mine, I think it was I bought my son one. I bought Brandon one, and he was only 16 when I bought it for him, or 15. I can't remember now. And I think they were $780 for your life. And now,
whoa,
after all these years, I guess I bought it for him as younger now. After these years, I mean, gosh, you can spend a couple hundred bucks a year on license just on deer and turkey and fishing and all the different things that you do. But I think they got up to about $1,000, and then they just quit the program entirely. But boy, the guys that got in on that, you know, you can, even if you move to another state, you can come back and hunt on that license in Indiana. You don't have to buy a non-resident license once you bought that lifetime license. I really wish they could reinstate that, even if you had to pay a little more. I know there's a lot of guys that would take advantage of that now if it was available.
Well, Dan, it's been a real pleasure. what did you say, Henry?
Oh, nothing.
Good. but it's been a real pleasure. I want to remind everyone as well that if you're interested in helping out wildlife education and wild animal rescue, you can go to our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and you can also send us a comment what you think about Blog Talk Radio, and if you'd like, you make a contribution and helps keep this program on the air around the world, I should say. We have listeners in Ireland and New Zealand, England, and so it's pretty cool. Next week on the show, we're going back to Padre Island, Texas, and talk to, well, he was nominated as one of the top conservationists in the country by Field and Stream magazine. Mr. Billy Sandifer is going to join us and talk a little bit about sharks and sea turtles and all the things he's involved down in Texas. And Dan, all the best of the Bass Pro Shops and Tracker Boats. You were fantastic. I knew you would be.
Well,
yeah,
I,
and you
I
know
really
what I think.
I enjoyed it. And like I said, you guys have an open invitation. And if anybody has needs any information, or if they need to contact me, feel free to email me or call me. I'd be glad to talk to them and look forward to it.
Absolutely. We'll have to have you on back again. We'll get into the fishing season.
And I think he has a lot more stories to tell us.
Well, he does. He does have many more stories. We will get into those stories in the future. This is the Internet, so we can say just about anything. So
I've got a few more.
I know you have a few more.
We'll have to talk about it. We'll have to discuss it first.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Oh, they're not that bad.
Big thanks to Eric Altman, technical producer in Pennsylvania. Thanks to Henry Day. Fine job first night, Henry.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. This is Larry Batson. This is Blog Talk Radio. This is Larry Batson's Wild World. We'll be back next Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week right here on Larry Batson's Wild World.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.